gentlemen, we to honest will conduct this hearing, so the next witness that we will hear will be the Honorable Mr. Rui Kiwanis.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Board Chairman. Sir, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir. What is your name?
It's Rui Kiwanis.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Again, can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
William Eric Stokes, 065373.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, and home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on your video conference screen, I'll begin with the opposite side of the bench looking toward me. We have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. I will begin the hearing with a summary. Mr. William Stokes, ADC number 065373, is 56 years old. The crime of murder in the second degree, a dangerous crime against children committed while on parole, occurred on or about February 23, 1990. He was approximately 26 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was found guilty by jury trial on December 19, 1990, and sentenced on January 14, 1991 to serve 25 years to life imprisonment. He has an extensive criminal history, which includes prior felony convictions for endangerment and robbery. The incident offenses represented an escalation in violence. I will read a summary of the current offense in question. Mr. Stokes is currently in prison on a 1990 conviction for murdering his girlfriend's 18-month-old daughter. Though the defendant appealed for various reasons, the conviction and sentence have been upheld numerous times by the Arizona Court of Appeals. Mr. Stokes was ultimately sentenced to life in prison, where he remains. He has served 29 years for killing a baby. In addition to the crime, he has at least two other felony convictions for robbery and endangerment. And according to this letter from the Pima County Attorney's Office, they believe this shows a propensity to commit victim-related crimes. According to Mr. Stokes' Institutional Progress Report, he has had considerable programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. He has a release plan, which includes living with his uncle in Tucson and other family support. He's had a moderate amount of discipline from 1988 through 2014, with his last major on October 26, 2000, for tattoo violations. This appears to be his 12th hearing before the board. Noted, he was granted early parole in 1988, which was later revoked in 1991 in relation to the incident offense, and if I'm not mistaken, that's an unrelated crime or a past conviction. He has numerous letters of support in his parole request packet. We also have a letter dated March 8, 2019 from the Pinal County Attorney's Office, which opposes parole. Mr. Stokes, this hearing is another chance for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the offense that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, Mr. Stokes.
You said 12th hearing?
You know what? I may have gotten my count wrong, so I will give you the right count here in a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, you've been before the board 11 previous times, but that would include past times prior to this conviction. But you had the 412B hearings, those hearings which would consider parole to your next consecutive sentence back in the 1990s. On this particular charge, it would seem that this is your fifth time before the war. Does that make sense?
Yes, here, you have me a little confused.
No, pardon me. I just wrote the total number of hearings before the board, and I recognize there's some weeds back there, sir.
That's okay.
Okay, so, again, can you tell us about the crimes that resulted in your incarceration, and why you think you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, sir.
You read out the paperwork there. In the last hearing, I sent you the paperwork that we had showing I walked in on what happened, and it seemed to upset you guys, and I didn't mean to, you know. I didn't do it, but that's okay. I took the fall for it, and I take responsibility because it was my lifestyle they were living in. That's what I can do. I've done everything in my power in here to become a different person. I learned to read and write. I have an education now. And I teach all the programs. Even the last time, I think one of y'all said something about no current programming. There is no current programming available because there's a mandatory, a priority mandatory list. But I was able to slide into the AVP class, the anti-violence program, which is a really good class, and I really liked it. And, you know, I'm still stay out of trouble. I do what I'm supposed to do. I've had jobs that were considered high trust. Now, I'm doing the best I can to be a better person. I try to help people when I can. When the young guys come in, which today's generation is completely different than mine, they don't want to listen to anything, but you can still try. It doesn't hurt to try. All they can do is refuse your help. So, you know, look, if I wouldn't have lived the lifestyle, nobody would have been there. And I can understand that. And that lifestyle is long gone. I've been clean for, 25 years, 26 years? It was time to grow up. And that's what I did. I've gotten older, and my body's broke down, and I'm pretty messed up, but it's okay. You know, it's things that can be fixed with surgical and replacements and stuff like that, so I can get back to somewhat semblance of normal and be a better, productive member of society. And, you know, I won't stop staying out of trouble. I won't get high anymore. I'm done. That's it. It's over. No drinking. I'm not. It's time to grow up. And that's what I, you know, like I said, that's what I did. It's hard to speak other than about me because I'm the one working on me. I see my psychologist every 30 days, I see the psychiatrist every 90 days. They did get the diagnosis wrong before they had me diagnosed as schizoaffective disorder. But I'm just bipolar. And then they had me on one medication that combined with the pain meds that I take would cause angry outbursts. So we switched it to another one, and now it works great. You know I have to take the medication. That's part of life now. So I'll continue taking it. You know, I will do my best. If I'm parole today, once I'm out, you know what? I know there's something to do with an ankle monitor, and that's cool with me. The only time you'll see me is when you go to take it off. That's it. I'm not coming back. I want to try to help rebuild the family business with my uncle and my brother-in-law. And yeah, I'm going to be limited, but I can do the paperwork and stuff like that. I can still contribute. And I want to help the family as much as possible. I would like to go to school or even do a correspondence course when I can afford it out there to be a sobriety coach or companion. Because for me, it was making a my mind that I was dealing with the drugs and the alcohol. With some people, it's not that easy. But it gets easier as you go along. And the drugs are my whole life, I did them. I did them, I sold them. That's what my life was based around. And I can't change the past. All I can do is change the future or be different in the future. Look, I'm sorry my lifestyle caused all this. I really am. I never meant for none of this stuff to happen. It's just the way I knew to support my family. And it sucks, and it's not right. And I know that now. I'm one of the worst ones preaching at everybody about not doing drugs. Whether they listen, that's on them. I can't force anybody to do anything. I can only make myself follow the rules and do what I think is right. And I think it's right to stay clean and follow the law. I'm done with everything from the past. I've seen all my kids grow up. Now I'm seeing my grandkids grow up. And they're beautiful. And I love them dearly. I don't know what else, you know.
Well,
thank you for the hearing. Yes, sir?
I was just going to say, you gave a very good introductory statement, and you present well, so thank you for that. We are going to ask you some questions, but I do want to begin by stating, and I recognize that with this particular offense, that this is not the first time you've been before the board. I've heard some very interesting news stories about the difficulty of parole boards in dealing with individuals who are stating that they have not done the crime. It's kind of a dilemma for boards because we have to take the information that is put before us at face value. This is not a retrial. We're not the Court of Appeals. We're not the Supreme Court. We're here to consider whether you have been effectively rehabilitated or whether or not we can safely transition you back to the community. But it is always hard when we're looking for individuals who are also showing remorse as part of that greater rehabilitation. You're saying you didn't do it, and I'm not going to argue with you about that, but you mentioned your lifestyle, and it was kind of vague. So when you say lifestyle, what do you mean about the lifestyle that led to this environment or situation?
I ran around with bikers. I sold drugs. I did drugs. That's the lifestyle I'm talking about. It's and because of that lifestyle, I'll take full responsibility. I take full responsibility. And it's something like this should never happen. Ever. And in my wildest dreams, I've never seen anything like this ever happen. And when it did, I scrambled to protect what was left. I made the wrong choice. And that's on me.
Okay, sure.
What I have to live with. Yes, sir.
You made reference to being clean. It looks like you may have had some past tickets inside the Department of Corrections.
I believe in 1991, I had a dirty UAS, yes, sir.
Oh, okay, so when you talk about being clean for a long period of time, from what point forward do you mean?
Actually, 95?
Then,
I believe my daughter Anna is there, right?
She's in the
lake. Pardon me, ma'am.
No, I'm just... No, I'm just using her for reference.
Okay.
Her and my son, Eric Jr., we were on a phone call. And they asked me, Daddy, please don't do anything that's going to make you stay in here longer. And I promised him I wouldn't. I broke too many promises to them when they were growing up. I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't break another promise to my parents, my aunts, my grandparents. I couldn't do it anymore. I said, "I'm done."
Mr. Stokes, pardon me.
Yes, sir.
No, go ahead, sir.
I walked away from every friend, everything that I had, that I thought were that, you know, no more. I'm sorry.
You did have past convictions for endangerment and robbery, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What was the endangerment associated with?
It was a prison guard. My wife and I split up. She needed a clear prison guard, and he didn't know we were back together, and he pulled up in my driveway, and my son, the one I was just talking about, ran over and told him, "Leave, leave," and he reached out and smacked my son. So I went after him, and I ran him off the road. And it was a stupid thing to do, but she, oh yeah, the kids. Especially this little boy, I think he was like maybe 18 months old. And he was wild. You know, you want to know about the robbery? It was a guy had owed me some money that I needed the money. And it was over a drug deal. And I slapped him and took it. Wrong decision.
So we're certainly not trying to indict you as a member of some sort of organization, but did you belong to a club?
I was affiliated, but no more.
You were a hangaround or a prospect or?
I was just affiliated with them, sir. No hangaround status, nothing like that.
Okay.
I've been around them my whole life, pretty much. I have uncles that are bikers. I love riding a motorcycle. It's fun. But I think it makes more sense to just go for a ride with yourself or with your family instead of doing that anymore. To me, it looks stupid now that I've been away from it for so long.
What was your past drug issue in terms of your personal use? Was there a particular drug you were using?
Methamphetamine.
And am I correct that you continued to use methamphetamine inside DOC before you cleaned up?
Actually, no, I think that was pot.
Okay.
Very UA for marijuana. Yeah, I did do something here for a while. I'm not gonna lie to you. Yes, sir, I did.
Well, thank you, Mr. Stokes. In your plans, you noted the desire to live with an uncle in Tucson?
Yes, sir.
That, do you also have plans for a halfway house or any other alternatives just in case? Because you don't always have complete control over where you transition into the community. So what's your big game plan?
In the previous hearings, I can't go to a halfway house. I have an active KOS on me from the Area Brotherhood.
Okay.
And it...
Okay. And... Did you read me? No, hold on. I want to get into myself, but I think... Just 1 second, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes. You didn't give any indication of work plans, so did you have ideas for work or sustenance or benefits?
Well, the family helped me at first. I have to have a knee replacement immediately when I get out and have part of my spine fused together, because if I get out this time, they're not doing it here. It has to be done. It's bone on bone. And the spine is called spondylosis, which is bone on bone, the vertebrae and the disc are bone on bone. And that'll have to be fused together. And then once I'm rehabilitated, everything, we should have everything set up with the work or with the family thing. The family used to do it while I was in here, using artwork and stuff like that. We did quite well. But then my mother got too sick and grandpa got too sick and they had to take care of them, so everything got set aside. And we made plans to start that over, and I'd like to do it. It's something I can sit at a desk and do the paperwork and run the office, basically, while everybody else does the other stuff.
Well, that sounds promising, Mr. Stokes. It's always nice to hear when people have good work plans. You also made reference to having children, so going back to the offense in the relationship that you were in at that time, was it a mixed family? It's all kind of coming back to me right now. Did you have some of your own children and some of your former partner's children, or what was your arrangement?
It was that way, sir. It was my kids, our kids, or my kids, her kids, and the twins she was pregnant with.
And did she have those twins?
No, she aborted them.
Okay. I'm going to ask my fellow board members at this point if they have any questions for you, Mr. Stokes. Thank you. Oh, yes, the Honorable Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Canonis. Mr. Stokes, how long were you involved in this relationship with, Alice, yes. How long were you involved with her?
I think since October the year before, October of 89.
Okay.
We got married on February 14th.
Okay, so like six months or so? 6 months maybe?
Yeah, I didn't know her before.
Oh, you had? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious if the information that we have suggests that the child, the victim, had ongoing injuries. I mean, that there were injuries all the time. And I'm just wondering why those weren't noted, why you didn't notice them, or did you notice them? And
no, ma'am, I didn't. The thing blinked out. I didn't hear the last of you.
No, I was just asking if you did notice them, what did you do about them, or why didn't you notice?
I noticed scratches a couple times and a mark on her arm, but I was away from the house at weeks at a time. It was always, she was walking good. She tried to climb one time when I was there at the stairs, which Anna, my daughter, and Little Bill were running up and down, and she did fall. She scratched herself, but it was nothing to just wipe, you know, clean it off, use some Bactine on it, and put a Band-Aid on it. But it's, I didn't know. The two people that did know didn't tell me. If they would have told me, this wouldn't have happened. You know, I may have been here seeing you anyway for her, because I don't go for that. That, to me, that's wrong. You know, if I would have known, if they would have told me, this never would have happened.
So you were just gone from the home?
I was on the road making money.
Okay.
I'd be gone 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I'd come home for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And it was, a little scratch. It looked like it might have been more on her face or the mark on her arm. But I would always ask, oh, she's doing this or she's doing that. And okay, because I know my kids well. My kids were playing on the bed one time and they decided they want to use it like a trampoline. Next thing you know, my son ricochets off the wall and it hit a nail and it freaked me out. You know, where it cut his head, I was all worried. He needed stitches. So I run in the house and my mother said, it's just a scary boy. You know, and it was like, are you sure? That's the way it is.
Okay,
you
know? Sir. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Believe me, Ms. Rittenhouse. Ms. Rittenhouse?
Yes, sir.
If I had known, things wouldn't have happened this way.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Yes, sir. Mr. Johnson.
So you made a statement to Mr. Quinones earlier. You said that you walked in on it. What is it that you walked in on, sir?
I walked in on her hitting on Kayla.
Okay.
I got called home.
And when you say she was beating on her, what was she doing?
She was hitting her. And I stopped it.
Uh-huh.
So that's enough. I didn't know the damage had been. That's Mr. Johnson, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know the damage had been done.
So
she was mad. Go calm down.
So why?
The damage had been done.
Why didn't you call the paramedics instead of taking the child to the neighbor's apartment?
Because because that guy was closer and he was a certified paramedic.
Okay, and so then you guys took the baby back to your apartment?
No, sir. She was there with him and I went to the apartment and called.
Okay, alright. So, there's, you're the one who went to the hospital. Did she go to the hospital too?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, did she go?
Yes, she did.
Okay, so, because we don't have all the information, it appears that you're the one who talked to the doctors and stuff at the hospital.
I told them that she fell, or, you know, I didn't tell on my wife.
Okay, so.
That's something I was raised you didn't do.
So.
You let somebody do something stupid in front of me now, oh, they're going to jail. I'm not,
Mr. Stokes, according to the reports that we have, there was nothing in the room that was consistent with the story that you told them, which you said you just didn't want to tell on your wife, but there also was something that said that there was some imprints on the baby's face that matched the imprint of some towel. I believe it was in the kitchen or somewhere in the house. So, how would you explain that if you walked in and you saw her beating on the towel, but there was some imprints on the face that matched the towel in the other room?
I don't know.
No?
Yeah, I don't believe, it's been a long time ago, I don't think I gave him a definite answer. The detective kept asking me, was it this, was this? I told him, I don't know, I'm just assuming.
Mm-hmm.
And
he didn't care for that too much, and I know that. Okay. I just one other question, sir, because in the report it says that the mother of the child alleges that you were the one who was assaulting. You were the one who or disciplining or whoop the baby or hit the baby or shift the baby. The mother was alleging that at the hospital. Why would you protect her when she's alleging that at the time that you were the one who was responsible for the child's death? Why would you be protecting her?
I didn't know she was doing that.
Uh-huh.
She was somewhere else.
Okay.
She was one place, I was someplace else.
Okay. All right, well, thank you, sir.
Any further questions? Yes, Honorable Dr. Wright.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis. I just want to make sure that I understand. Maybe I missed something. In the past, sir, I believe you stated that you were not guilty of the offense. Are you saying now, were you guilty or were you not guilty, sir? I just want to make sure that I understand nothing that we can do, as Mr. Kiwanis has indicated, we're not a court of law, nothing of that nature. But are we dealing with someone who committed the crime, or are we dealing with someone who did not commit it? And if you did not, then what happened, sir?
I'm on
lecture.
I guess she was hurt bad. That's what I walked into when I got the call at my aunt's house. That's what I walked into. She screamed so loud in the phone I could hear her 10 feet away through the park to get my backside home before she killed the little, you know.
So who was actually who was beating the victim? Who was beating the victim at that time?
My wife, Alice.
Your wife, okay. And how long have y'all been married, sir?
We just got married February 14th.
Okay.
We had known each other for quite some time. We've been back together for maybe 6 months, I think. 5 months, somewhere around there.
Were you aware of the fact that she had been the victim before this particular incident, sir?
No, sir, I wasn't. That's what I just told Ms. Junk or Ms. Rittenhouse.
So all this is
gone a lot.
Well, this is just brand new for you, and so let me ask this. I know all this is kind of this way, but what happened to your wife, sir?
She got slapped on the head, basically.
Okay.
That's it.
and you end up spending all this time incarcerated?
It's okay. It's my lifestyle. I take responsibility.
Okay.
You know?
And I guess my final question is, go ahead, sir. Excuse me? Go ahead, sir.
I should have told him from the beginning, but I didn't. And I'll take that. I have to. There's no choice to make. Nothing can give the time back. Nothing can bring her back. And if I wouldn't have stayed or wouldn't have got together with her again, or if I had known, things would have been a lot different. I would never have come back here for this. But I'll accept the responsibility. It was my lifestyle. You know, it was the drugs. It was everything they've come under.
And I guess my final question at this time, sir, why should this board, or why should I as a board member consider returning you back into the community, sir, releasing you in the community, sir? How could you convince me? What would you tell me, sir?
I'm not the, Mr. Ray, I'm not the same person I was. I'm older and wiser, much older and wiser. I've got an education in here I didn't have before. I started a business from in here, and we made $90,000 in about a year. And we took care of the family. Grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, the kids, everything. I helped my parents. I couldn't be there physically, so I helped them pay and support the kids. If I had it still going, I would still be supporting them. I don't care if I don't have money in here. They're the ones that are important. And I think that once we get everything we started running out of here, and we can work on everything, we should keep it as a family business and help the whole family. I'll be a taxpayer. I'll be a better citizen. And I do want to do that. We're the sobriety companion and sobriety coach. That's something that's really important to me. If I can help one person get away from and stay off the drugs, that most of my experience, I think, would be, I want to say worth it, but I'm not sure that's the right term. But I'll know that I've done something good, better, you know?
And
if I'm able to help more than one, it's a...
Yes, thank you so very much, sir. And thank you,
Mr. Wright.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Stokes, I just have a few follow-up questions, and then it should be noted that you have some supporters here in the room, and they will be given a chance to speak before the board. One, to the best of your knowledge, you mentioned that your, I guess, ex-wife had her hand slapped, but what sort of punishment did she receive, or did she receive any punishment from the criminal justice system?
She spent 6 months in a county jail. I can't even remember what it was for. I know initially in the charges, I was charged with 2 counts of murder, one of being felony murder and the other one being second degree murder, and never a predicate felony. She was charged with a predicate felony. And I never understood that, but that's neither here nor there. The time's done, it's gone. You know, I can't change that. But she ended up getting about 6 months in the county jail.
It's just to understand the greater case. And did she testify against you?
Yes, sir. She did.
Do you know anything about her history since then? It's been a long time, but did Child Protective Services separate her from children or anything of that nature?
She lost, she ended up having this, it was a baby boy, and she ended up hooking up with some guy and going to Arkansas and having 2 or 3 kids and lost 2 of them there. I don't know if she ever got it back. This is just things that I've heard from people that...
Understood. I wasn't sure how much information was available to you, but it's, again, it's just to understand the greater case.
This case, she came back here and had 2 or 3 more kids. As a matter of fact, her nephew was here a few years ago on the same year that I'm on, and he showed me a picture, and I asked him, who was that? And he said, that was Alice's daughter. I told him, no, the other one. He said, that's Alice. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Because it didn't look like the girl I had known or married.
The other follow-up question, were both you and your ex-wife under the influence of drugs when this incident happened?
Yes, sir.
Both of you?
Yeah, I had slipped when I got back from out on business, and that morning I got up and I got a little bit, but she had taken about three, what's called an A-ball.
Okay.
She took that out of my pocket of my pants because it was testers, it was for, to be tested. And her girlfriend did pretty much the whole thing in about 6 hours.
So
they were gassed out.
Were you both under the influence of methamphetamine then?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your candor. Again, it just helps us understand.
Yes, sir.
If I have no further questions from fellow board members, I'm going to ask your supporters if they want to testify before the board this morning. Do anyone wants to speak? Ma'am, if you want to come forward. And we don't have a lot of people here today, so I won't put real strict time constraints, but I will ask you to be concise so that we can get to the hearing. But thank you, ma'am. And if you can state your name. Sorry.
My name is Julia Sokatch.
Thank you, ma'am.
And I'm Eric's aunt. His father was my brother. And I have always maintained that Eric was innocent of this crime. And the fact that he took the blame for it, he was taught that you protect the family. And even though they had only been married a short time, he was not aware that she was a child beater. He found out later that she had her children taken away from her prior to them getting married by Child Protective Services. And she did testify against him. And that's why she got off with 6 months in jail. And I think she might have been having to, I don't know, they kept track of her for about 18 months after that. And she was heard bragging at the bar, I did the crime and he did the time. So he never was rough even with any children. I mean, he's always been big. He was big for his age, and he just never, he left the corrections to his wife, his first wife, before he married Alice. I didn't know Alice, but I knew his first wife, and she did the corrections for the kids. He never touched them, and he didn't do it. And he's done all this time, and I think it's time that he's let out.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am. Just a quick question. If that boast was made by his ex-wife, how did that get back to you?
A friend that was at the bar at the time.
I appreciate that. Any questions from fellow board members? Thank you for appearing before the board, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak?
Yes,
thank you, sir. And you can state your name.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ralph Weaver. I'm 79-180 years old. I'd like to testify for Eric or Zeke, or his nickname, Zeke. And I worked for both sides of the both prison. I worked for the state of Arizona for several years. I actually retired as a copper miner up in the Globe, Miami area. And I work for CCA, which is a federal Department of Justice run institution down in Florence, Central Arizona Detention Center. And I work with maximum custody. And what I'm sitting here thinking today, I just hope that this doesn't drag. I know he has committed a crime, and he's trying to own up to it. But I've seen it go so long that it gets to where the sentence is just like a punishment, you know, rather than a correctional type thing. And I would sure like to see him considered for a parole. I think it just might work out, and I just almost know that it will, because I've known him. I'm his uncle as over the last 7 years. My wife and I just got married in 2012, but I knew him. I have a son that's about his age, and he's a heavy duty mechanic for Empire Machinery. And anyways, I've lost my thought train. That goes with my age, I just told you about. But anyways, it wasn't a lie, but I'm going to tell you
all. Well, let me say, you're not going to be 79 to have these issues. I'm losing names really bad these days. But go ahead, sir.
Well, anyways, he and my son were friends. I've known his parents. Jim, his dad, was a real good friend of mine. He worked up at the mines also up there at Globe, Miami. And I just couldn't hardly understand it when I found out about Eric, you know. Anyways, that's all I have to say. I'm taking up your time, but thanks for listening to me.
Sure, just a quick question. Sir? Sorry, just a quick follow-up question. It was just a curiosity. You said you worked for the state or for the federal government of corrections?
I worked, when I first got married way back in 1960, I worked in a central unit for the state of Arizona.
Okay. Were you a guard?
I was a guard.
Okay.
A correctional service officer is what they had us refer to it. But anyways, I quit there. I had other jobs, but I quit, and my brother worked up at the mines, and he had me a job waiting up there with them. And I spent most of my career through all the strikes and the shutdowns and what have you, and I made it for 30 years. And then I went to work for, in between there in 1982, I went to work for the state. Down in Florence, I worked in the South Unit and the Central Unit, and that was in 1983. I was in the class of January 83. They had the training there on the prison grounds right there where the old women's unit used to be right up front. And anyways, I quit. I got my 30 years in with the mines. Am I taking too much of your time?
Well, I just wanted to understand whether or not you've been a corrections officer or if you've worked in a different part of DOC.
And I work for federal, okay. Which is the Department of Justice. It's CCA's Corrections Corporation of America. They contracted the federal prisoners. Actually, we had the state of Alaska, the Hawaiians, and the federal prisoners.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else who wishes? Yes, ma'am. If
you can. Sorry, I was late, so.
If you can just state your name.
Anna Stokes.
And what would you like to show the board?
I would just like to say that this is my fifth time being here, fourth time being here in front of you guys. I was on the phone as well last time, but you guys say, you know, you're not putting him on trial. He's been through all of that. Everything's happened. He's 30 years. I'm 33 years old. 30 years. And I feel like he's showed remorse, and I feel like that he's a changed person. He's definitely not doing drugs. He definitely has an education. He's bettered himself as a person as much as you can in a state of Arizona prison. And he's taking college classes. He's a completely different father than he used to be. He's an amazing grandfather, and I would just really, really, really like to utilize that time that he still has on Earth for my children to know him. Our prison. So that's basically what I have to say. I think that he has showed remorse, and I mean, what more can you ask for? He's done everything that everybody's asked him to do. So I feel like it's probably time, in my opinion. Obviously I don't have as much experience as you guys do, but in my opinion, he showed a lot of remorse, and he's done everything that he could to better himself as a person, and I really think that you could consider him for parole. I would love for him to be around my children. I don't care who said I had to, would keep my kids away from him. If I felt threatened by my father, my children definitely would not go to prison and see him, because it's not a place for children. I was raised there. So, but like I said, if I thought my children were in danger, they wouldn't go visit. They wouldn't see him, they wouldn't write to him, nothing.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions from the board members? Okay, thank you for approval for the board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Stokes.
Yes,
we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know and understand before the board goes into discussion and votes on this case? Thank you, sir.
I'm really not sure what to say. I would appreciate being paroled. I think enough time has went by, and I'm not who I was. I know that's repeating myself, and I apologize to you. But other than seeing me for an ankle monitor or whatever they do with that, to remove it or whatever that is, that's the only time you're going to see me. I'm afraid if I got a traffic ticket, would it be for going under the speed limit if I drive? The way they're driving out there right now, I don't think I want to drive anymore. That scares me. But I missed all of my kids growing up. My mom and dad are dead now. My grandparents are gone. My aunt's always left, my aunt and uncle. I would eventually like to live close to them to where I can help them. They deserve it. I'm sorry. It's just emotions. I won't let you down. That's a fact. No, no. I won't let my family down. I can't do that ever again. I would rather die than do that. And I apologize for this, but that's how emotional it makes me. If you look at the size I used to be, you'd think, oh, what's this guy just crying, baby? I won't let you down. I won't let them down. I won't let myself down. I'll be a productive member of society. May take me a little bit to get fixed up, you know, but I will. Yes. I know we've seen each other, well, you guys, I think I've seen y'all, what, two or three times. But I've seen Mr. Wright, he's been there every time that I've saw him. And I've always heard to get to know you. I didn't understand that at first, and I thought about some wisecrack. But then I thought better of it, because it might not come out right. And it was just the wrong place to be. So I would really appreciate you granting me parole. I would love it. I mean, if y'all have grandkids, how does it feel to take them fishing? How does it feel to play catch with them? I played catch with my kids in here. And that's my own stupidity. the life I lived. I know that. But I won't ever live that life again. That's it. It's done. It's over with.
Thank you.
That's about it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Stokes. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just stay on the phone and listen in, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir. The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, it's hard not to be disturbed by this type of case, and at the end of the day, I'm not sure how the events unfolded. I certainly have to take what's provided to us in good faith, but I also have heard Mr. Stokes' account, and I recognize that it was probably a neglect in one form or another by both parties. And as I stated at the beginning, it is difficult to be confronted with a parole case where an individual is stating that they didn't do it, although I will say to Mr. Stokes' credit, he is taking responsibility for everything leading to the situation and his lifestyle, which is meaningful. I recognize that he had a past with drugs, to include drug use, and the effects of methamphetamine are devastating. It sounds like that there was some drug abuse going on, once again, by both of the caregivers. So I will begin the discussion by stating that based on his it's not a standalone issue, but considering that he has not had even a minor discipline since 2006, I recognize that there was a possession of drugs in 14 that was dismissed, and a 2006 disciplinary order that was informally resolved. I'm not completely close to the idea of considering parole, but I am in, once again, a dilemma with the scenario. So that's where I'll begin the discussion. I really look forward to the input of my colleagues. Yes, sir, the Honorable Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. One of the things that we always, or often think about in being in this job is we sort of have a standard that we want to have the individual admit or really tell us what happened and take responsibility. And it always bothers us a little bit when somebody says, I didn't do it, but yet they've been convicted by a jury. And, every case is unique. And in this case, I really do think Mr. Stokes has told us what happened. I really do think he did tell us the truth. And the part that troubles me a little bit is that, and he answered me when I asked, why didn't somebody notice the beatings, the injuries? And his explanation was that he wasn't around much. And I suppose I could believe that. And he said he was using drugs too, and that might have clouded his ability to see injuries. That's the one thing that continues to bother me, is that nobody, and specifically he, did not notice. And certainly his supporters have testified he doesn't hurt children. So I would think he would be the one who'd step up and say, hey, what's going on, when you see bruises or cuts or whatever. But he tells us he just saw the one that was a little scratched by her eye and then a mark on her arm, and the mother had an explanation for how this happened. I'm feeling him today to be very sincere. And I truly don't think that he will commit another crime. I mean, that I don't think. I think the public is not in danger from Mr. Stokes. So I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of on the fence, but I could be open to releasing him to the community. Thank you, Mr. Fernandez.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. And let me follow up with that, too. It's not a counterpoint. I certainly believe that the two parties involved in this case were on the path of neglect. Mm-hmm. But, again, we're here to consider whether or not Mr. Stokes can be safely transitioned to the community. And, of course, that broad issue as to whether or not it serves the interest of justice. But I will continue from there. Yes, over Mr. Johnson.
I'm going to say I kind of disagree. I'm just having a little bit of a problem with Mr. Stokes' statements. He says that he's responsible because of the lifestyle that he was living. And in the same token, he says that he was not around much. So I don't know how, you know, his lifestyle, if he was not around much, just based on what he said, you know, and then he takes responsibility for it, saying that it was a lifestyle that he used, but he was not around much to see what was happening. So I don't know how his lifestyle would have impacted, you know, this. And his statement for not doing something because he wasn't around much, and when he did come around, he would see that they had a scratch, and he would always have an explanation for why he had a scratch. But it almost sounds like what I was listening to today is that he was never really there that much. But I don't know how, you know, you would take responsibility for something, saying that it was because of the lifestyle that you was living and because you were doing drugs. But even though you were doing drugs, if you were not around that much, you can't take that responsibility. And I do feel, you know, that both he and the mother were responsible, but I'm not sure that in the best interest of the public would be for him to be paroled. And the reason that I don't feel like that is that I think we still have to protect the safety and the interest of any child that he may be around. It may not be one of his grandkids, but it could be another relationship that he gets into. And the fact that he states that, you know, he knew or saw something that was wrong, and that he didn't tell the truth when he went to the hospital of this child, or what had happened to this child, and made up the story that the child had fell out of the bed. He's the one who did the interview, and he's the one who talked with law enforcement. And if that's his style to, you know, make excuses for someone committing harm to a defenseless child, then you know, I don't think that person would be deemed to be not a threat to the welfare and safety of the community or any other children that he may come in contact with. That's my opinion, especially since, you know, he denies, you know, things aren't making sense, you know, that I'm guilty because of the lifestyle that I was living. But when further questioned by Ms. Rittenhouse as to why he never reported it, he says that he was not around that much, and that he came and he saw something. But, you know, if you're not around that much, how is your lifestyle the responsibility for it? And you take that, and the mere fact that he was also on parole at the time that these incidents occurred, that all of this stuff happened, that he was on parole at the time that it happened, which is why he wind up with the life sentence. And I think I'd have to go back here to see exactly what he was on parole for. Although he was almost off of parole, I think he was within his last year of his parole. So at this point, I'm not seeing these two stories add up.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further input from my colleagues? Dr. Wright.
Thank you, sir. I think that this is a very unique situation. I think that any time that we have a situation involving a kid, a young person, it's just hard to ignore what happened. And I think that, you know, it's just not fitting in place with me at this particular moment. But I'm still open, but it's not hitting me at the moment. something happened. He was not aware of it, and he admitted that they had known each other for a long time, but I think they just recently been married or something, but that they had known each other, and it just seemed to me that one would be aware of the fact if someone was abusing a child. Something just lacking in my opinion. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Any further report? Mr. Wheel? Okay, then I'm going to talk just a little bit more, then I'm going to make a motion. Again, listening to the dialogue and considering my own feelings, I'm personally weighing rehabilitation versus the interest of justice, and I think after listening to my colleagues, I'm not finding myself quite ready to support parole. I do want to say, as a matter of encouragement, that I see promise in Mr. Stokes. I certainly see promise in his trajectory and his rehabilitation, but it is I just think that there are still some holes in understanding the whole of the event itself, and I'm not quite ready to support parole, so I'm going to go ahead and make a motion, and that is regarding Mr. William Stokes, ADC number 065373. My motion is to deny regular parole absolute discharge on arrest, and based on the year of the crime, I'm going to ask for a 1 year set off, and that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Okay.
One second, seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, given by the Honorable Dr. Wright, the Honorable Mr. Johnson down in his Rittenhouse. Again, I'm asking for a set off for 1 year. Release type denied is 412A, 411HA, and reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, serious bodily injury, violation of previous parole, history of continued substance abuse, and I am speaking inside the Department of Corrections. I recognize that he says he's cleaned up in these recent years. Prior criminal history, repeat offender, don't have what I would consider a truly recent disciplinary infraction with his last minor being in 2006. Does have programming, he has a release plan, he presented well before the board, he has family and community support. Is there anything else that any of my colleagues wish to add? Okay, Mr. Stokes certainly deliberated deeply, if you will, on this case, but I was also sincere about the encouragement. I do think that you show promise. I think that you're on a path, and we look forward to seeing you again. So in the meantime, we encourage you to continue any programming that may be available to you and to stay safe inside the Department of Corrections, and we look forward to seeing you again in approximately 1 year. Do you have any questions, sir?
No, sir.
Well, thank you for appearing before the board. This will bring our hearing to a close, and thank you for being so pleasant with the board, Mr. Stokes.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.